In Parshas Vayira, there's a striking Rashi. My father, Rav Shalom, couldn't get past this Rashi. Rashi's found on the daf in front of you. It's in Perek Chavalet Pasuk Ches. There the Torah describes the birth of Yitzchak when Avraham Avinu was 100 years old, the Bris Milah, the reaction of Sarah in Pasuk Vav, Tzchok Asali Elokim Kol HaShamei Yitzchak Agli, and then the child is weaned in Pasuk Ches. Vayigdal HaYelo Vayigamal Vayas Avraham Mishte Gadol V'yom Nigamel Etz Yitzchak. So Rashi translates the language of Mishte Gadol. Little translation, of course, refers to a great party, the way the Targum translates. Mishte Rabba. Comes Rashi, that's the Targum Onkelos. Comes Rashi and translates Mishte Gadol, Shehayu Shom Gadol Yador. Rashi translates Mishte Gadol, who was present? The Gadol Yador. That made it to Mishte Gadol. All the VIPs. Who are the VIPs that I mentioned here? Shame, Be'ever, Ba'avimelech. So my father just simply could not handle it. Shame and Abram, we understand. They certainly belong in the category of Dol Yador. You have it at the bottom of the page, this Rashi. What makes Avimelech worthy of being on this prestigious list? Is it because of his many dealings with Avraham Avinu? There's another king who also dealt with Avraham Avinu. Aram Elefitzray. Why wasn't he invited to this Mishteh Gadol? So there's only one inexorable maskana to be derived from this. There's quite a distinction between Avraham Avinu and his relationship with Avimelech, Avraham Avinu and his relationship with Paro, and that's what you have in front of you on the sheet that we will discuss. And this is essentially what I gleaned from my father, Zecheinu Livracha, and later on from a number of my rabbeim, all addressed the same issue, but if you look and show them carefully, if you learn Chumash properly, you will see the distinctions, but first you have to read the text properly, and that's always the beginning. So perhaps one could argue that the difference between them is geographical in nature. Paro lived in Chutz Aretz, and Avimelech lives in Gerar, look in the left-hand column. By Yisra Mishom Avram Arza HaNegev HaYeshev in Kaddish Ben Shur, by Yoga B'Gerar, Gerar of course is Eretz Yisrael. And yet it seems that that's not simple, so that's not sufficient to understand the distinction between the two. And let's now begin to itemize in great detail some of the distinction between the relationship between Avraham Avinu and Paro Melech Mitzrayim that we had in last week's Parsha, and that which we see in this week's Parsha Vayera between Avraham Avinu and Avimelech. Number one, let's just read the Pesukim, maybe we'll just get an overview, just to give you, put you in the proper context. I'm first starting with the Rav on the right-hand column, Pasuk Zayin. There's a famine. Avraham Avinu leaves Eretz Yisrael. He comes to Mitzrayim, makes an arrangement with his wife that since she's very attractive, the Egyptian might see her, they might kill him, and they'll take her. So she should identify herself as his sister. It'll be great for everyone. Avraham Avinu came down to Mitzrayim. Continues in Jedalid. They see her, and that's exactly what happened. They quickly tell Paro about her, and the pasuk said, "Batukach ha'isha beis Paro." She was taken forcibly. Batukach. And then, Avram hates him. Bavur and pasuk design. I'm reading the right hand side. Avram Avinu is the recipient of a lot of largesse in the part of Hashem, cattle, flock, servants, and Hashem decides to punish Paro, and he is essentially afflicted with the Ga'im Dalim, all types of plagues. Paro calls Avram and says, why didn't you tell me that it was your wife? Why didn't you tell me it was your sister? And I took her as a wife. Here's your wife. Kach Balech. Get out of here. And then Paro sends him off together with his emissaries. That's the relationship between Avram Avinu. Now let's look at this week's Parsha. Here, again, I'm summarizing. Avram tells Sarah, Achosi, this is the agreement. And Avimelech sends for Sarah. And then, Pasuk Gimel, comes to him in a dream. She's a married woman. You're going to receive the death penalty. But Avimelech lo karavi leha, didn't come anywhere near her. And he calls himself, he says, Hashem, hagoy gam tzadik taro. I'm a tzadik. And the explanation follows. Halahu amar li achosihi. That he identified her as his sister. And what did she say? That's my brother. Whatever I did was done b'som levavi, b'tom lev, u'benikim kapai. My hands are clean. So Hashem responds to him in the halom, gam anochi adati. Yes, one of the things is correct. B'som levavcha. But he doesn't mention b'nikim kapai. We showed him already make that deal. And I essentially was the one who intervened in order that nothing should happen over here. Okay, luna satichot and go elel. And then, pasuk, the one after, pasuk zayim, yata hoshem eishes ha'ish ki noviyu. Let Avraham Avinu daven for you. It's the Mishnah at the end of the paragraph. Achayu l'mavakama. The Mishnah that speaks about achayu b'chaveh achayu b'chamisha dvorim. That's the tzar v'yibu shem z'boshes. But it's not sufficient. Monetary restitution is not sufficient. Rather, you also have to ask for mechila. Two Mishnayis and Shas, one at the end of Yuma, one at the end of Berak Achayu l'mavakama. And this possibly cited by the Mishnah. Namely, Hoshim Eishes Ha'ish Ki Nobihu, Yisbal Bachcha V'chiyay, there's a need for mechila. If you don't do so, you're going to be subject to the death penalty. Now the Torah goes on, and look at this lengthy description now, following upon the heels of this. Avimelech gets up in the morning and tells people what happened. They're frightened. Avimelech calls Avram, what did you do? Pasuk test. Guilty as charged, he tells Avraham Avinu. Look what you caused here. You simply behaved in a fashion that's absolutely not acceptable. So Avimelech tells Avraham, there are two separate statements. We have to understand what these two statements are. Why did you do this? So the next line is probably one of the most famous lines in Tanakh. It's as though you are Shamayim. There's no sense of being God-fearing. Then everything is over. And beyond that, I'm a big London. And he goes on to describe his peregrinations. And I told her this is the agreement I made with my wife. Tell everyone you're my brother. And Avimelech then employs Avraham Avinu, Bitzon, Bokar, Avodim, Shvachos. And he says, you're invited to become a citizen. And to Sarah, this needs separate attention. And Avraham davens on behalf of Avimelech to Hashem, there's Mechila, because during that period of time, they were not able to have children and the like. Okay, so now we've seen an overview of the two stories. Now we're going to begin to contrast the two stories. Hashem speaks to Avimelech clearly. What about in reference to Paro? He does not speak to Paro at all. Now one could argue maybe because Nevuah is only in Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramban writes in Dvarim and the Sefer Kuzari, all group of Rishayim feel that Nevuah is limited to Eretz Yisrael. When Paro takes Sarah to his house, the Torah says, "Vayinaga Hashem is Paro the Goyim Gedolim." He's afflicted with all kinds of severe plagues, and yet not a word is spoken. On the other hand, when Avimelech takes Sarah, and Hashem also inflicts on him a terrible onesh, every womb is completely closed off, but he also reveals himself to Avimelech, "Bachalom Laila," and you're going to die because of the woman you took. Yeah, but not here. I'm discussing this specific situation right here. So not only did Hashem, you're assuming that all the parables are all the same, and Chazal, Rishayim are talking about that. But here in this context, we don't see any connection between Hashem and Paramelech Mitzrayim. Not only does Hashem reveal himself to Avimelech, but even accepted some of the arguments. Avimelech says, how could you go ahead and do this? Hagoy gam tzadik taharo, a nation, a righteous nation. I'm a righteous person. She told me He's my brother. He told me she's my sister. Whatever I did was b'som levavi, perfection of my heart, u'nikyun kafei, cleanliness of my palms. I'm completely innocent. So Hashem says what I mentioned. One of the two, yes, kind of made the b'mikzas on the part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But we see that Hashem was the one who spared him from sinning. So Paru is immediately smitten for his act, what he did. While Hashem speaks to Avimelech, allowing him to defend himself, even accepts part of his defense, it appears that Avimelech's status is superior to that of Paru, just by virtue of this particular issue. Beyond that, Avraham Avinu's relationship with Avimelech is totally different from Paru. Following the revelation that Sarah is Avraham Avinu's wife, so Paru demands in Pasuk Yitzchak, he wants to know, Mazo sosisoli, what did you do to me? Lama lo yigadetoli ki ishtachayi, an accusation. Lama marta achosi, why did you identify her as your sister, and then I took her as a wife? Get out. Notice, the Torah records no response from Avraham Avinu. He doesn't respond. And yet, when Avimelech asked Avraham, why did you do this? Avraham explained, Ki amarti, rake en yira salokim b'makam hazeh. There's a dialogue between Avraham Avinu and Avimelech. With Paro, no dialogue. A one-way street. Paro Melech Mitzrayim, Avraham Avinu does not respond to him. Avimelech, back and forth. In actuality, Avraham Avinu did not really respond immediately to the accusation of Avimelech. At the beginning, we're told, first Avimelech summons Avraham Avinu, Vayikra Avimelech le'Avraham, and says, Me'asi salonu, u'mecha tosilach, what did you do to us? Ke'vei salai b'amachti chato'o g'dola, masim asher lo yasu asisa imadi, these that aren't done, you've done to me? No reaction on the part of Avraham Avinu. The next pasuk, Vayom Avimelech Avraham, second time. Why is it that now Avraham responds? On to the second charge, but not to the first. And the answer, Lichara, has to be, the first time, he's not asking a question, but rather, what did you do? It's an outburst. It's an attack. He's fulminating against Avraham Avinu. And the first time he presents himself as clean of any wrongdoing, and Avraham Avinu, you perpetrated this terrible action, you speak to me that way, Avraham Avinu does not respond. There's no need to respond to such an approach. However, the second time, he seems to change his tone. Namely, why did you behave in such a fashion? Considerably more modulated and moderated. Here, Avimelech is no longer levying an accusation against Avraham Avinu. He wants an explanation. Why did you inform me that Sarah was your sister? Why did you tell me that? Presumably, you had a valid reason. So Avraham Avinu, okay, you speak to me respectfully, I'll respond respectfully. Rakamati, what did I say? And Yiras Elokim, Bamakam Hazeh. There's no Yirashamayim over here. The reason Avraham Avinu does not respond to the initial charge of Avimelech is the same reason he doesn't respond to Paro. When a person attacks me in vitriolic tones, he's not interested in any answers to my questions. Paro essentially shouts at Avraham Avinu, what'd you do to me? Why don't you tell me she's your wife? And without waiting for an answer. And of course, what's his response? Hinei ishtecha, kach v'leich, get out of here. That's the approach of Paro Melech Mitzrayim. So even though Paro was in the wrong, and Hashem afflicts him, Avraham could have responded, someone who speaks in such a fashion, Anek Seal Ki Hivalto, also says in Mishlei. How do you respond to a seal? Someone who speaks to you foolishly, Ki Hivalto. Basically, you don't respond to him. That person has no interest in hearing explanations. He just is accusatory. Hashem Ki Avimelech, there, the language of the Pasuk, at least the second time, seems to indicate that he's interested in perhaps some sort of an explanation. There's another distinction in the character of Paro and Avraham Avinu. Paro feels no need to offer Avraham any kind of compensation. No pizzeria whatsoever. It's a favorite word in this country. What does he serve him? An eviction notice. Here's your wife, get out. So Rashi on the spot actually points out that there was some element of noble intention in Paro's desire to send Avram out. Paro was frightened. Why? Because the Egyptians are steeped in licentious behavior, immorality, znus, promiscuity. And he was frightened that the Egyptians may now covet Sarah Imenu. But this was a major concern. He could have offered Sarah 24-hour police protection. Regarding Abimelech, however, what does he do? He feels the need to offer a pizza.
So how do you understand Pasuk Tetzayin, Avram hated,
That's a game from Hashem. Nothing to do with Paro. Paro did not offer him not even a farthing, not even a shekel, not even a piece of sterling. Wait, zero.
He got these things. And
well, Avram hated Bavrua, but that's HaKadosh Baruch. So given all these shvachim we have given out to Abimelech, it was suggested that that's what Rashi means. Shoyu shom gdoli ador. Shem ve'eber, sun gdoli ador. Abimelech is a well-mannered, a decent guy. To get that, that's already for the gdoli ador. And that's why you should be invited to this Mishneh Gadol, to this great feast that Avraham Avinu throws when Yitzhak was weaned. Paro's not on the same level. He's not going to be invited among the Gdolei Ador.
There's no Yerushalayim in this place, so how could it be a well-mannered?
I did not indicate, and nor did indicate in the Pesukim one way or another about Yerushalayim. That is what Avraham says to Abimelech. In the context of Paro, it's not mentioned before. So I'm simply indicating that Avraham Avinu, again, as I said, he hides the fact that Sarah was his wife because he says, as you pointed out, Roshmuel, there's no fear of Hashem in this place and they'll kill me because of my wife. You can be one of the Ador. You can be very well managed. You'll offer me also 1,000 pieces of silver and I can live in the land of the Pushtim and yet you're still liable to kill me. You know why? Because if there's no Yerushalayim, then with all the good intention, I'm going to get to that a little bit later, but all the good intentions in the world, it doesn't make a difference. And else, when there's no fear of God, all of your manners are worthless. What guarantees that your manners will be able to stand up to your drive, to your desires, to your sexuality? And if I had to withhold the fact that Sarah was my wife, I had no choice. And we know that there are many so-called cultured and civilized nations who behave ruthlessly. The Klavis, I'm talking about the Germans and the Shoah in general, as cultured as they were, as refined as they were, but there was a lack of Yerushalayim.
Why is he called a gadol?
I'm just using the term gadol. As I said, well-mannered goy. That's the sense of gadol. For a goy to be well-mannered, he's a gadol. So, tov shebegoyim, yilemishneh kedushin. Yeah, I'm sorry, you wanted to hear the first.
Yeah, is there a connection, like, a year later, after this episode with Abimelech, Sarah is pregnant, and did this episode have to happen close to like what happened? Then the story with Abimelech, and then
The chronology is not so clear in the text. You don't really know. I mean, I think in Midrashim
it's Tolos.
That's what's about that Rashi also. But that's for another occasion. Anyway, but why that term is used over there? As opposed to the Gdoli Ador, a different terminology. And this needs a whole shiur, which I have actually, but another occasion. But I'm just saying that the chronology of events is not so readily apparent in terms of at least in the text. I'm just reading the text of the Chumash. You don't really know whether this event occurred at what point in time. So that's all I'm saying. I'm just pointing out my whole yisod over here, which is not a chiddush at all. My father, this was so pushed to him. A guy could be, a ruler could be cultured and well-mannered. I don't think you remember, even you, you're a young man. So there was a fellow in Spain, now I'm going to get off the topic. So there was someone in Spain, Generalissimo Franco. Perhaps you know that name. I'm a student of history as well in my spare time. So he, this chap, was an ardent Catholic, a devout Catholic. And he would go to the church and go through the entire holy ritual and cross himself. And then when he left the church, then he engaged in behavior which was ruthless beyond ruthless. Ah, you're also a historian, much more than I am. So there's no stira. One can be cultured, well-mannered, and there may be laws on the books that forbid stealing and murder, but whatever Supreme Court you have could find the chapter to justify killing Avraham Avinu, taking his wife, taking his assets for themselves. Everything is perfectly legal. Don't forget, Abimelech is a law-abiding citizen. He wouldn't take sorrow without justification. Chazal, Rashi quotes it actually in Bereishit. Rashi says he went around asking all the slaves, and the camel drivers, and the donkey drivers, who was Sarah? So they all said, she's Avraham's sister. So had they spoken the truth, had they said that he was wife, don't worry, they would have found a way to justify her being taken anyway. We know this very well. We have good examples, even in, shall we say, our wonderful country that we live in. Avraham Avinu is a threat to national security. He'll incite the entire population. Are you aware of the fact that in the Ukraine is a threat to Russia? Everyone knows that. Ukraine might decimate Russia. And therefore, we have to destroy them.
If you say NATO, doesn't Russia claim communism? I think he watches Russia. He says NATO, that the Ukrainians, that he believes that the NATO is threatening.
Whatever he thinks. He's a megalomaniac. He should be taken out. Sir, so the point I'm trying to make is that who knows what security problems he'll have if Avraham Avinu continue to espouse his dangerous views. Just like Volensky, he espouses many dangerous views. Okay, I don't want to discuss that. That's not really my answer. One second. So there's no fear of God. Then all behavior can be justified. And it was not only Avraham, but also Yitzhak as well, who doesn't trust Abimelech. If all the lessons Abimelech may have learned from the past, Yitzhak does not trust him years later. If you look in Perek Chavah, but you don't have it in front of you. But that's what you alluded to, Dr. Mazenka Shlita. When Yitzhak arrives with his wife, Rivka and Gruar, he also lies to Abimelech and tells him that this is my sister. Vayeshev Yitzhak Migruar, Perek Chavah, Pasuk Zayin. Vayisholam, Shem HaKom Yishno, Vayom HaChotzi'i, Ki Yorei Lemor Ishti Penyar Guni. Same story. But Abimelech inquired as to why Yitzhak deceived him. Yitzhak responded that I'd be killed. Yitzhak was well aware, he could be well mannered, was speaking to Abimelech because Abimelech learned lesson from Hashem. Maybe he's a Gol Ador, relatively. Yet Yitzhak understood very well that he couldn't be trusted. And he was the type of Gol Ador. We have many Gol Ador like that. If you want to call Putin one of the Gol Ador, and a few others that I have in mind, I'll try to be politically correct in this country. But be willing to do all kinds of things in order to take the life of Avraham and Yitzhak. So, you know, Gol Ador does not preclude one who's a thief or a murderer. That's not Shem Be'Eber, but Abimelech. So Abimelech's servants, if you remember later on, now that you have me on the case, also over here in Perek Aleph, that Pasuk Chavav, Vayera, you're familiar with these parshas. That wells that Avraham Avinu had dug, and Abimelech's servants steal those wells. Of course, Abimelech apologized, saying, "Lo yodati, the osur sadov asur. I don't have a clue who did this. The gamatol lo yigad atodi. The gamanochi lo shemaiti b'tzal yom. I just heard about it." So Chazal have what to say about that comment on the father of Abimelech. You look at Midrashim over here. Barichos. The fact that Abimelech's servant stole points to the fact that the notion of stealing is not far beyond Abimelech. He can steal a well, he can steal a wife, no problem whatsoever. No clue. So Abimelech's manners don't stand up to the test when it comes to his relationship with Yitzhak. If you remember here also, again, in Perek Chavav, he told us Yitzhak becomes wealthy. One of the early mentions of anti-Semitism in Chumash. In Perek Chavav, here the Torah says, "By Yigdal Harish, what a pasuk. My father loved this pasuk. Vayigdal ha'ish, vayelech haloch v'godel ad ki godal ma'od. My father loved this kind of onomatopoeia, the poetic waxing of the pasuk. Vayigdal ha'ish, vayelech haloch v'godel ad ki godal ma'od. Then the Torah describes vayilom mitnei tzom mitnei boker v'avuda rabba vayikan v'asol plishtim kino. Moment later, when they build an apartment, they build a home. Guess what? All the pipes are satum. Welcome to Eretz Yisrael. Simbum plishtim by Yamal Bofa. Vayom Rabbi Melech Hanitzok. Leich me Yimanu ki Yatsramtim bimenu Ma'ud. And Vayoshev Yitzok. Vayach Bo Meres Hamayim. Vayisat Mum plishtim. That's what they do for a living. They stop pipes. That's their... Sorry? And Shumsof. They're following the rule of thumb of Chazal all the way. So, by the way, the Germans, as you know, there's a whole literature on this topic. The Germans actually even accused us that we amass wealth at their expense. There are many anti-Semitic German tracts. I don't know if you read them. I have. And that's also very, they're very fond of that. So Avimelech accused Yitzhak of having taken away his livelihood, has to leave immediately again. It's all legal. Everything that's done is legal. We have here also institutions that are very into legalities. I'll get to that in a bit. So in this regard, Avimelech's behavior is even worse than Lavan. Lavan at least acknowledged the Yaakov Avinu that here in Perek Lamed it should be. One second. At least he acknowledges that the Ribono Shel Olam is the source of that bracha. By Rochein Hashem, on account of you, as full of deceit as Lavan may have been, Lavan, Oisius Novel, it says in Zoyar, and Mephoshim, and Chachmei Asod, Chachmei Kabbalah, as much as he tried to take advantage of Yaakov and even kill him, he acknowledges that not only did Yaakov not try to take advantage of Lavan, as his children claim, Yaakov brings bracha into the house of Laban. So, the point I'm simply trying to make here is that, as I said, clearly there is a contrast between Paro and Avimelech. And we see the Avimelech, as you put it in your beautiful way, using the dictum of Chazal. Even upon Yitzhak's departure from Gerar, what the Torah here also, in Perek above, the Torah describes that the Roim, the shepherds, find cause to quarrel with Yitzhak regarding those wells. And as I just mentioned, they stopped them up and filled them with earth. So due to the intense hatred and jealousy they felt, so Yitzhak, they were willing to destroy their own land. Isn't that incredible? That also reminds me of what happened over there in Gush Katif. Yeah, they gave it a $1 billion industry and decided to engage in destruction of that industry. It's absolutely incomprehensible behavior.
Destruction of families.
Yeah, no question about it. And Yitzhak once again digs the wells. And Chazal said that they basically wanted to, and this is what they had in mind over there in Gush Katif. Chazal commented they wanted to wipe out the memory of Avraham Avinu and all the influence he had in the world during his lifetime. As they state in Zohar. And that's apparently was their intention as well. Those tzaddikim over there in Gush Katif. So Avraham Avinu planted an Eisha in this week's Parsha. What the Ram describes in Perek Aldoch Zav Lazara, Yomar Tzaita, Achilo, Shesir, Lebiya, Aita Eisha B'Varshova, Vayikosha, B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam. The goal of the Plishtim is to uproot any reminders of Ruchnias Avraham Avinu planted, and Yisrael has to rebuild everything. Of course, all of you are aware that the Palestinians have been here for 1,000 years. They came before the Beis HaMikdash was built. And if you, as Goebbels taught us, well, you say a lie and continue to repeat it and reaffirm it and rearticulate it, unfortunately, the world is so gullible, they believe it. So, the bottom line is, Ein yiras Elokim b'makom hazeh, v'aruguni al v'arishti. All the Baal Musar constantly speak about this. So Chazal tell us, all of us are aware of this statement of Chazal, Chochma v'agoyim tamin. There is Chochma among the nations of the world, and Shum Sofek. I'll read the Lashon Chazal. Im yomu lecha adam yesh chacham bagoyim, tabi. There is chacham bagoyim. There are even goyim who know Tanakh. There are goyim who are professors of Tanakh. There are goyim who are professors of Talmud. But a person tells you, yesh Torah bagoyim, al tabi. The chachma that the non-Jew has, in general, whatever wisdom they have, is abstract. It doesn't become a guide in a person's life. There's no question there are Hasidim Masa'olam, the Rambam writes about them, righteous Gentiles throughout history, and yet the Torah remains for them a theoretical, intellectual, abstract kind of concept, not influencing their lifestyle, their behavior. And there are many stories that abound. There was a professor of ethics. And we have, I don't want to mention names in this country, so-called professors of ethics, whose behavior leaves a lot to be desired. If you're interested in further discussion with me, I'll be glad to have that with you. I can't imagine any of you read what these people write. I did. So I can tell you about them. But there was once a professor of ethics whose personal behavior did not exemplify that which he taught. When he was asked, how could that be so? He says, I don't see the connection. A math professor has to be a triangle. He remains a person with two arms and two legs. The same is true with me. I'm a professor of ethics, but I have no relevance to me personally. I am who I am. And he could be the most unethical person in the world. He's a brisker. Tvei dinim. Or one of the Roman sages who dictated to a servant an article he was writing, condemning kas. They also spoke about different character traits. So he condemned anger. The servant wasn't careful and knocked over a bottle of ink and spilled it over the page. The Roman sage got so angry, he killed the servant. Why not? Tvei dinim. I preach one thing, and the way I act is another. No connection between scholarship and grammar. Tvei dinim. Zelechud v'zelechud. So Avimelech may be a god of Adora based on his, shall we say, mannerisms, relatively, but there's no connection to that in his character. He's willing to kill in order to take the wife of Avraham Yitzchak. And unfortunately, sometimes we find this disharmony even in Klal Yisrael as well. Hopefully not something that's very common. We have a Torah to guide us. Often we invent heterim for ourselves. The biggest lamdan in the world is Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara is a miracle of Talmud Chacham. He is Shele in Kol HaShas. He can find the heter for everything. He's not always aware of all the Yisurim. He knows how to find bullets. He's essentially involved in all the kulas of Lachash and Zvil Gufa and Miskavin. He's a London Muflon, Givalvi Chidushin. Now, there's no doubt that sometimes Gemara says, Karach the Heter Odin, Gemara Beitza, that it's good to find the Heter when leniencies are being called for, if it would be undue suffering, Kavod Abrius, but obviously, we're only going to apply these things when it's appropriate. And in order to do so, you need tremendous Yirat Shamayim. One of my rabbeim told me that they read an article where the author contended that when invited to someone's home, you could even partake of food, even though the kashrus is questionable. Why? Kavod Abrius. Kavod Abrius. You can't insult your host. You're allowed to take the food. That heter leaves what to be desired, to say the least. Undoubtedly, to embarrass, God forbid, another person is a terrible infraction. As Chazal speak about, Amavayish is Chavero, Luz is Chel Golem Haba, no question about it. But where do you find that we're allowed to eat non-kosher food in order to avoid embarrassing some Kavod Abrius? The Gemara speaks about Yochanan ben Gadol and Tamai. Most people, the Ami Haaretz, did in fact do hafrasha. They tied that which they had to do. There's a danger of taking food that was not maaser, but he established a law forbidding eating the food of Ami Haaretz, and that would be maaser. So you have two brothers. One may be a chaver. Chaver in Mitzvah Achzel, the Masukah, the Gemara says, regarding two of some maasers. And that was an Amoritz. So until this Xera of Evelyn Kongo, the Chavi used to eat in his brother's house, suddenly he no longer does so. So the brother could ask him, why are you eating? He suspect that I was not mafresh the maaser. Of course I did. It doesn't matter. You have to come to the decree that I can't trust you. These matters didn't be testified that you were supposed to. What about embarrassing my brother? What about Shalom Bayis? What about Kavan Abrius? What about all that terror? So the point that Yochanan Kohen Gadol can be making sure that kosher food enters our mouth outweighs that consideration. And he asked food from an Amoritz, even though most of the Amoritzim were mafresh. And we generally rule Acharam Lahatos, the Mishnah Sanhedrin, the Bez Manal. We see that apparently consuming non-kosher food is quite serious. I remember many years ago, 1983, when I met Hagoyim from Yaakov Kavaleski Zatzal. He was 93 years old in Muncie with my wife Shlita. And I asked him, among the many questions that I applied him with, I had a bottle in front of me. Wow, I went to town. 93-year-old man, clearly frail, but Hashem Shofi Budato the Gamri. One of the things I asked him was, I taught Russian students, I taught Iranian students, and I noticed that, and I don't mean to be Chas V'Shalom in any way racist, the Iranian students were very refined that I taught. They escaped from the days of the Shah through the Carpathian Mountains, all kinds of unbelievable escapades and stories. The Russians were, well, you know, they called the young children that's herself Chayes HaKedesh. I see a lot of Chayes, maybe a bit of Kedesh, hopefully, if it's Hashem. Here, the Russians I taught were just pure Chayes. So I asked him, how do you explain the distinction between the Russians and Iranians? I asked, I'm going to be active. So he told me, he asked me, do you know something about Jewish history? I don't know if I should answer yes or no. I wasn't sure. I'd say a word. So then he proceeded to give me, he spoke in Yiddish, and I spoke in English. So he proceeded to give me a lecture on Jewish history, what happened in 1917, the Russian Revolution, how communism emerged, and how the Jews in Russia were basically behind the Iron Curtain, and they attempted to completely exorcise O-R. I can't spell it for you now. I want a spelling bee, but I won't get into that issue right now. They wanted to essentially expurgate and totally eliminate any chas v'shalom, any zik of Yadus, any Judaism whatsoever in kashrus and every single area in mikvahs and what have you. No, as a result, they were compelled to eat non-kosher food, tipt malev, rishaynim, he cited for me, rishaynim, bal peh, rambams and rambams and all sorts of rishaynim, Rabbi Akiva, 93 years old, unbelievable. However, the Iranians, even after the Shah fell, and Iranians still maintained their fealty to kashrus and to basics of Judaism. I know this, I taught many Iranian students, and many of them are doctors today in California, here, there, what have you. And the main thing is they support my yeshiva, Baruch Hashem. And
business to the yeshiva goes.
What?
Business to the yeshiva goes.
That's right, that's correct. So he said because of that, they remain with a refinement of character. I was astounded by this. I mean, I told my Rebbe, when I met him in 83, I'm going to Nissan Alpha, he arranged the meeting. I told him, he said, right away, come to Hashiva, come to Hashiva, come to Rav Meisher, the Torah Meisher, which you just heard. I go to Hashiva, I tell him what he said, I told him a few things, but this is one of them, distinction between Iranians and Russians. So he says, Rav Meisher, Sosayim Yisha, Chakiba Dididoi, starts praising Rav Yankov, and I got a hug from Rav Meisher. That was the only hug I ever got from him. But so it's amazing, back to Kavanat Abrius, it's not a reason to permit eating food that's kashrus is questionable. Despite that, you can do both. You can avoid eating the food. You don't have to embarrass someone and the like. And this is, again, something which is very significant. We have to be sensitive. One of us, Yer Shamayim, has tremendous sensitivity. They say over, I heard many, many stories, both from Talmidim, Hagoyim Shlomo Zalman Oibas Hatzal, and also I read probably after his Ptira, about 7 volumes of his Spaden and of Shlomo Zalman, at least 7 volumes, probably more, some in English, some in Hebrew, and in Yiddish. So one of the stories I saw, which is amazing to me, showed the sensitivity of Shlomo Zalman for his fellow human being, fellow Jew. He was seated in his family for the Purim Suda, and one of his relatives came to bring him Shlach Manos, and then a relative had a daughter that only recently, unfortunately, underwent a broken engagement. She was engaged, and the engagement was broken. And the man told the Rav that his daughter was waiting in the next room and wanted to get a bracha from Maran HaRav, from Shlomo Zalman Oibas Hatzal. So Shlomo Zalman responded that she cannot come into this room. I'll go out, I'll leave my family, go to the next room, and give her a bracha. So I said, what? He was an older man. He was also a Gol Hadar, incredible Talmud Chacham. Not by covenant. He already washed his hands. He was having the purpose of his family. Why would he do something like that? Why would he go to the trouble of going to her, a young woman? She was still young. She could easily come to the room. He said, Bashum Panavayfan under no circumstances. He got up, went to a private room, and he began to give her a bracha. And she was so moved by his bracha, she began to cry. So the Rav then said to her father, "Would you have wanted her to cry in front of the entire assemblage, all those people that were gathered here?" So you see how far you have to go in trying to understand the feelings of another person and trying to appraise their actions. There are many stories regarding, we have some people of from good old England, spotted tea and cream. It's much better to know about England. Maybe South Africa, you have that also. You don't have that culture. Anyway, I have two or three English people in my yeshiva, and I'm looking for that spotted tea and cream. I still haven't seen it. I don't know what's with them. They clearly went off the deaf. So there's a story regarding the Rosh Yeshiva in Manchester. Segal Zatzal, he was participating in the Sheva Brachas. He was told that a woman wanted to speak to him at the telephone regarding a certain matter. And the woman was 40 years old, didn't find a shidduch. So the Rabbi asked his host, is there an extension to the telephone line, another room? He wanted to talk to her from there because everyone's busy singing. Everyone's in a joyous kind of situation, the Sheva Brachas. And if she were to hear sounds of joy, she would be even further saddened by the brothers of the fact that she's not yet married. And if not married, such sinful, he wanted to spare her that pain. So, rocking, yourself a kid by Baba Mazli. The key to everything is your Shabbat. I have to make the last comment. I said I won't talk about, I didn't talk about the elections before the elections, but after, I've already made a few comments here and there about the elections. I don't know if you remember. When the government, the last government, was in power, they did all kinds of things. I can't go through the long list. I have a list in my head of a number of things that they did, innumerable, that angered people in the Frum world and people even in the secular world. But they're in power. They can do whatever they want. Do so unencumbered, freely, no inhibitions, no restrictions. Now we have Baruch Hashem, the Baruch Hashem and his kindness was mezakas with the Frum government. Now, essentially, we want to do something of a civil nature in the other direction, of course. And they are screaming bloody murder. And I can go through a long list of what they're screaming about. We are obviously people who are, I would say, even socialists, communists. We have people clearly who are not objective. It's unbelievable, the hypocrisy of politicians. The world of sheker. That's what politics is all about. Pure sheker. So I'm not, shall we say, enamored of politicians. Baruch Hashem, I didn't enter that arena because of this reason. I was actually told by a number of people, at one point they suggested I should become a Rav Shkuna and perhaps even become eventually Rav Ha'ir. I didn't think that was my destiny or interest or any of that, largely because of the unfortunate politics that swerving about these positions and the like. So the key is Yirat Shamayim. So how do we implant in our children Yirat Shamayim? The answer is we have to be Yirat Shamayim. We have to be models, paragons of virtue. We have to act with Yashrus. We have to act with Kavod Abrius. Abinam the Chaver has to be impeccable, not just Abinam the Mokom. And even though we may have all the external dress of what it means to be a Frum Jew, but externals are externals. As I've said many, many times, and continue to say it, Lo ha'kova kovea, v'lo ha'mi'il mo'il, v'afilu l'tayi sh'yeh zakan. And that I see all the time. Do I have to translate that? Or I do? The hat does not establish your frumkeit. And the long coat is not going to really help. And even a goat has a beard. So, I agree. So I'm not impressed by Chitzonius. I never was. I'll just end by pointing out, I asked two Gdolei Yisrael, how come they don't wear long coats? I asked Hagoyim, Rabbi Avraham HaKohen Pam Zatzal, many, many decades ago. I couldn't believe that I saw him sitting in Torah Vadas in Yeshiva in the middle, not even in the front. He was a Shiva. He looked at me as if, are you crazy? I should wear a long coat? And then he starts telling me who his rabbeim were. Doli Ador, I'm not Roy Lekach. Same question I asked Hagayin Nadav Feinstein Zatzal more than once. The second time he told me, you already asked me that question 3 years ago. That was a little bit embarrassing. I asked him the second time, but he gave me a different answer. And he said, look at the picture on the wall. He had a picture of his father, a Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. He wore a long coat. He was Roy to wear a long coat. I am not worthy of wearing a long coat. Wow. Yashamai. That's what we have to nurture, cultivate. And but primarily, we have to be Malzul. Kashet Atzmecha, Yachag, Kashet Acherim. So we have people in the government who spend a lot of time Kashet Acherim, but they've forgotten one thing. First, adorn yourself before you adorn others. They need a lot of adornment, and that is a lifetime of work for all of us. So halabai, we should become models of Ben Adam Lachadero, Ben Adam Lachmoko. And that's Lissi Ban Shom should continue to give us Yad Mishmaya. We should have from governments, Eretz Yisrael should be populated by the Torah world. And we should introduce Shmiyas HaMitzvos, something which is an ideal that we should strive for, Limud HaTorah, and Be'ez Hashem Yisbarach. There's no doubt in my mind that it's just a question of time. We can change the entire country, change the entire culture, but we have to do so with the Cheretz and with the Chavod, and Be'ez Hashem Yisbarach will have enormous Yata Lishmaya here in Eretz Yisrael.